Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Trish, there is a new accessory midlife women need.
Oh, God. Where is this going?
Liz Earle. Lovely Liz Earle.
Yes.
Lovely Liz Earle, who we had on the podcast, who's amazing, who's a guru for midlife women, has just turned 60, written a new book, but gave an interview at the weekend in the papers and mentioned her new thing, which is her 43-year-old boyfriend.
What?
He's 17 years younger than her. So I note that Liz has got herself a lovely 43-year-old boyfriend. Sounds great. The weekend, she announces this the weekend that your Neil turns, you've got yourself a 70-year-old. Oh, no, not 70. 60-year-old. 60-year-old husband now, haven't you?
Oh, my God, I have. I mean, goodness, 60 is old enough. You don't, I mean, you're number mangling your maths. So I have, I think he's going to get a bus pass. He's going to get a free bus pass any day now. Now, we did have a party. It finished at 5 a.m. So all I'm saying, everything else, can't tell you. Top secret. It was quite something.
Just a number.
Yeah.
It's just a number, isn't it, age?
It's just a number. But as we say, whatever Liz has, we want, don't we? We want it. We want what Liz has got.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife. I'm Lorraine Candy.
And I'm Trish Halpin. If you're living in a hormonal hot house, feeling a bit overwhelmed and in need of some positive, uplifting and comforting guidance on how to lead a more magnificent midlife, then this is the show for you.
We chat to celebrities and experts on all things midlife, from menopause and perimenopause to parenting teens, via fashion, beauty, wellness, nutrition, fitness, careers, relationships, caring for elderly relatives and your finances.
Yes, we ask experts and famous guests all the questions you need answered to have a happier, healthier and more harmonious second act.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back, everybody. Good morning or evening, lovely listeners. We are back at Postcards from Midlife Towers after our short break, back in our luxury caravan. This is how I imagine it, Trish, in my fantasy recording studio, that it's you and me in a sort of souped-up RV, all mod cons, sat in the Florida sun, looking at the turquoise sea with our little Louis Vuitton blankets on our knees and our Dior awning and our Chanel jackets and your Dolce & Gabbana walking poles.
It's not quite like that, is it? I've got an M&S vest on and I'm in my basement.
Oh, God.
It's not quite the same. It's not Golden Girls in Florida. And you're in your newly revamped tiny little shoebox office, aren't you? Doesn't matter though. We like to think that we're bringing glamour. We imagine we are bringing glamour to the podcasting world as former glossy magazine editors, and we're back to kick off season 12 of the show with a super useful podcast, which is going to remove stress from everybody's lives. It's a big promise, but as usual, we're going to deliver on this one because we have picked our guests, especially because it's a stress awareness month. Well, actually, we've just finished the month, but it was stress awareness month. We're now in the next month, but kind of nearly there, I'd say.
Yes, I know you get a bit worried about the rules, don't you? We missed
the
month.
I know, very precise.
Anyway, who cares? April, May. I'm very excited about our two guests. Yes, we've got two guests because the duo have written a book which is packed with new science-backed ideas on how we can combat the overwhelm of midlife. And it's something we feel a lot, isn't it, this stressful overwhelm?
Oh my goodness, it certainly is. We chat about it a lot. We've both experienced that sort of sense that you just can't cope with as much stress as we used to cope with. You've written about how your window of tolerance, that's the phrase, isn't it, on stress, as you call it, has closed. I think that's the process she goes through. You get so stressed that you then go, right, I can't do it anymore, can't do it anymore. So if any of you listeners feel like this, we can confidently predict some really good strategies from our guests to help you lead a less stressed life when they come on. In fact, we're going to let that interview run a bit longer because it's going to be so much good advice. We're going to keep our little jibber jabber at the beginning a bit shorter this week because it's great advice and we think you need to hear it all.
Indeed, we are on our first episode of season 12. But listen, Trish, we might have missed Stress Awareness Month, but we haven't missed another important date, which falls this week every May. What do you think it is?
Is it Feline Appreciation Week, pussycats?
No. That's never going to happen in my lifetime.
You'd never mention it if
no,
it was, would you?
I would never mention Margot. Appreciation Day is every day for Margot, isn't it? It's the start of Hedgehog Awareness Week, Trish. What don't we feed hedgehogs, Trish?
Milky bread. The stuff we used to put out in the 70s and 80s, milky bread. It's very bad for them. You need to give them water and feed them. It's actually little kitten biscuits, I read. Little baby kitten food, or possibly some cat or dog food instead. So we should all be checking our gardens for hedgehogs, shouldn't we? Especially if you've got a lawn and you use a lawnmower or a strimmer, please check your garden. Now, part of the birthday celebrations that we mentioned at the beginning of the show, Neil's birthday celebrations, we went to Alderney, which is the home of the blonde hedgehog. Have you ever heard of a blonde hedgehog?
I feel like that's a very glamorous hedgehog to have. Like sort of a Marilyn Monroe hedgehog. Is that what you're telling me?
I think it is. Well, apparently they don't have fleas and ticks like all the hedgehogs we have here on the UK mainland. No, it's something that I'm not going to get into because we haven't got time to go all David Attenborough as much as we'd like to. But I actually stayed in a hotel called the Blonde Hedgehog. Very nice. Very small, Alderney.
Wow.
Highly recommend it. Pretty. Anyway, we digress.
If any of our listeners want to know more about hedgehogs, and who doesn't want to know more about hedgehogs, go to the British Hedgehog Preservation Society website because there's been a huge drop in numbers of these little nocturnal fellas. So the British Hedgehog Preservation Society is raising money for them with a special week of activity. So it's worth having a little check on that.
Before we get to our stress-busting interview, should we have a few little messages from our private Facebook group, the Postcards from Midlife Facebook group? We always have such fabulous posts and emails. Remember, you can email us directly at hello@postcardsfrommidlife.com if you're not on the Facebook group. But why aren't you on the Facebook group, we would say?
Yes, come and join us. So I'd like to start with a couple of brain fog bloopers, which is what we do quite regularly, because brain fog, even if you're on HRT or whatever you're taking, you never remember anything after the age of 40, do you? Like that lady that took the bobble hat in instead of the hedgehog to the rescue place. Anyway, we had a lovely picture from Rebecca who wrote, "Hot drink. When you absentmindedly take a swig from your candle thinking it's a glass of water. Crikey." She hashtagged it menopause injury extremists. It's a thing we might all do, actually, isn't it? I mean, these are not rarities. And there was another lady who put a picture of her jogging on her holiday.
Yes.
Bravo for jogging on your holiday. But she had her leggings on inside out, which is something I do about every third time I put my leggings on, frankly.
Oh, well, speaking of fitness, Kelly Ann wrote about and posted a picture of her new bike, which she has named Tallulah. And Kelly says, "I fell off a bike face first when I was about 10 and smashed two teeth and hadn't been on one for about 34 years until my patient supportive other half persuaded me to have a go on a rental bike around a lock, which I have done a couple of times since. I put my big girl pants on this weekend and bought this new beauty, this new bike for me. I'm scared and excited in equal measure. I just had my how to work the gears session with my partner and I'm going to take it for a proper blast tomorrow. I might be 47, but sod being scared of trying new things." Well, bravo, Kellyanne. I love a bike. Actually, she followed up with a short post later, thanking all of the Facebook group who'd sent her support messages because she'd just done 12K ride off-road and was dead proud of herself and her new bike, Tallulah.
Good for you, Kellyanne. I have never been at peace on a bike. Let me tell you, I've had many explanations of the gears and none of it makes any sense. But I've even done two triathlons, Trish. I'm not giving up because I do like being outside when I exercise. There was another lovely post from Jeanette about my forthcoming tattoo, which I'm doing in celebration of that ridiculous swim I'm doing around the Scilly Isles in September. We mentioned this in our bonus midlife skincare episode last season 11,
I'm still looking for the right tattoo artist, and I like to talk about it because my daughters are very cross with me because they say that I'm copying them because they've got tattoos.
Obviously, these young people, they invent everything. We've never done any of it before, yeah. Have we?
Anyway, Jeanette wrote, listening to your bonus podcast yesterday and the subject of tattoos and piercings came up, and I thought, oh my goodness, I'm on trend for once without even knowing. I have had a helix piercing, that's the one in your ear, isn't it, and a tattoo. The tattoo is the name of my first grandchild, a grandchild we didn't think we would have, and a milestone for my daughter. She had an awful pregnancy, which when you've waited for so long, felt so unfair. She says that her daughter had hyperemesis, gravidarium, and pregnancy sickness, and there is a Facebook group for that as well. But we got such a wonderful gift at the end, so we got matching tattoos, and she put up, they've got little tattoos with the name Evan and a little heart on it on their wrist, which I thought was a lovely thing to celebrate, isn't it? I can't wait for grandchildren.
I think you'd quite like to wait a few more years. I'm not sure you're quite ready. A few more years, girls, don't do anything silly yet. Right.
A few more years, yes.
All I can say, though, Jeanette, is don't get your grandchild a hamster. We had this most incredible post from Julie. It's one of these sort of, it's a bit of a shaggy dog story, isn't it? It's quite a story, so you're going to have to bear with, because we need all the ins and outs, because it's one of those days, weeks, where you just think, oh my goodness, can anything else possibly go wrong? So here is the post. So she said, I thought my week was going particularly well until Wednesday when I realised I had been washing my hair in the dog shampoo. I thought the smell was familiar, but couldn't put my finger on it. Then on Thursday, my 12-year-old, who is mad about animals, comes crying to me. Her dwarf Russian hamster had died. The thing was only supposed to live 18 months, yet 2 years later it was still with us. But after about 10 minutes of crying, she says, oh, maybe he's just hibernating. So I said, oh, maybe we should check. Suffice to say that, nope, he was dead. So even more tears. Older daughter comes down to see what's going on. She then decides to get a paintbrush and try to poke the hamster, but screams when she sees what comes out. He exploded.
I mean,
more hysteria from the 12-year-old. Aww. This is not about animal cruelty.
No.
I just say. Right, more hysteria from the 12-year-old. With me trying to calm her and explain, no, they release fluid when they die, and that he didn't explode. The 12-year-old asked me to bury him in the garden alongside her rabbit. While she was at school, I was supposed to dig the hole, but it was so wet I couldn't do it. I popped him in the cardboard box and left him in the garage.
You know what's coming, don't you?
Oh, what a tangle web we weave.
Don't tell your kids fibs, yes.
Well, when she came in, I told her that I had buried him. All was good. Me forgetting that he was in the garage. And then got caught out. When she spotted him, I had to come clean. Unbeknown to me, my husband saw the box and knew it wasn't needed. So binned it.
Oh, God.
The bins were put out. It was very windy.
Oh,
the wind
no.
blew the bins over, and you can guess what fell out. Yep, the bloody hamster in the box. So there I am, out in my PJs, before the 12-year-old sees me scooping up the box and the hamster so she doesn't see it. Some would call this karma. Karma because I lied and said he was buried. Well, now he is, but had to do it out of the sight of the 12-year-old because she thought I did it the day before, etc. Now, anyway, also forgot to mention the postman reversed into my car. What a week. Poor old thing.
Well, I kind of think that they should teach pet maintenance when you first have children, actually, alongside all that baby stuff you teach you. Because I've got four kids, so we've got through all manner of furry things that have all met some kind of bizarre, grisly end. Our Russian dwarf hamster, Walter White, had a cancerous lump which was almost as big as him. And he lived for ages with this massive lump.
Goodness.
I know. And the girls were like, we mustn't put him out of his misery. He looks perfectly happy. But it was really quite a grueling thing. They should tell you.
Can I just quickly interject there? Why have you called the hamster for the small children the name of a crystal meth maker from a hit TV show? Surely they didn't know who Walter White was.
We went to the pet shop to get some fish. But we couldn't get the fish because our water wasn't at the right whatever pH level. And then there was a wall of animals that nobody wanted at the pet shop that had been brought back.
Oh, okay.
And there was Walter the hamster. And we were watching Breaking Bad at the time. And I thought, oh, well, we can call him Walter White. It'll be funny. And then we took Walter home. But we'd soon discovered he'd been discarded because he was really bitey, Trish.
Oh, dear. Naughty.
And only I could pick the little fella up. So I was left in charge of this thing for years because he was too unpleasant for everyone. Anyway.
Okay.
The other thing we love on
on our Facebook group is the Brilliant Travel Recommendations. It's like a private travel service because you don't just get where to go.
I know, exactly.
You get the wine and the cake to order and everything. You get a very detailed service. Sarah McMull had posted about her two trips on the group. She went to Lucca in Tuscany with her husband, which the group advised her to. And then she went off with her friends to Lisbon, which again the group advised her on. I mean, who needs Alan Wicker, Trish? Do you remember him? Alan Wicker. Travel man. Don't get your Alans in a twist.
Yes.
Wickers. Yeah.
Oh. Wickers World. I loved that the group gave her very specific wine drinking and hotel advice. She posted a picture of her with a horse.
Yes.
Random. A lot of pets today, a lot of animals. Well, anyway, she said, he's not my travel companion.
Why did she have to qualify? It was obvious she hadn't gone to Lisbon with a horse.
Yes, but I think her friend didn't want her to post a picture of her with her on the group. So we got a horse instead, which is fine by me.
Yeah, very entertaining. They've got a great sense of humour on the group. And it always makes me laugh just popping in. I was following the mother route versus my evening glass of wine thread, which was very funny. And also, which bras work for bigger breasts? That was funny as well. All very helpful. Now, I also have to mention the wonderful Kay Horton, who came on our podcast retreat last month in Cornwall. Kay is doing a wing walk, Trish. A wing walk. Is that your next challenge? You know what a wing walk is, don't you?
Oh, my God. Yes. No, I think that would be above and beyond. Can you imagine the hair, the face, your face being blown backwards. I mean, I don't know. I've heard some stories. But anyway, go Kay. We are full of admiration for Kay with her walk along an aeroplane wing this September in aid of the Sunflowers Suicide Support Charity. Now, Kay is a trustee of the charity. And if you have a look at her Just Giving page, she explains she wishes she and her family had more support when her brother Michael very sadly took his life 30 years ago. So just pop over to Just Giving and type in Kay Horton for the link if you'd like to find out more and support Kay. And that's Kay Haughton.
Good luck to lovely Kay. She was very helpful, wasn't she, on the retreat? She used to be a nurse and she has some very helpful tips for us. We will keep you updated on her training, though how you can train for a wing walk, I don't know, because you know me, Trish, I get vertigo when I get in the car. I'm 4x4, so high up. I also want to say good luck to all the parents of teens who are enduring revision and exams right now. It's all happening right until the end of June. We've got mock A-levels in our house. And I know a few of you have posted on the Facebook group about your teens feeling really stressful. And you're looking to alleviate that stress for them. So I've got a little bit of advice and some people that you might want to follow could be helpful. Maria Evans is the teen coach on Instagram. She's putting lots of advice up there. Please dip into Lisa Damore's books and Dr. Tara Porter's work. Have a Google of those names and see what you can find useful. The mental health campaigner, Natasha Devon, she works in schools, has written about revision and stress as well. And Young Minds has got some great stuff on their website. But I would also say that when I wrote my book about parenting teens and I talked specifically about the stress around exams, one of the things that we need to do is to teach them or to allow them to feel panic. It is perfectly normal to panic and feel this stress. So we don't need to always alleviate. We just need to say it's okay to feel like this. It's normal, rather than trying to cure it, which reinforces their fear around it. So just that's a little bit of advice for you. It's a bit of a time to do what they call a gentle pot plant parenting, to slightly back off and just let them get on with it. I know sometimes you look at your teenagers and you think, what the hell are they doing? They haven't done any revision, but just back away and let them deal with it themselves, because it will be what it will be. And you can't make them retain that information and you can't take the stress away, because it's a very stressful time. You can just be around with some nice things. Talking of stress, Trish.
Talking of stress, it's time to meet Mo Gordat and Alice Law, who have written a book called Unstressable, A Practical Guide to Stress-Free Living, which is out this week. It's really specific and turns our beliefs about stress on their heads. And we think it's going to really change the way you view your stress.
Yes, I loved the book. I thought it was very helpful. No more stress for me, Trish.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Are you feeling frazzled or overwhelmed? Is life a bit too much right now? Has stress finally gotten the better of you? Firstly, me and Trish know how you feel, sending hugs, as they say. Secondly, we're about to make you feel a whole lot better. We're making a bold promise today, but we really do think we can pull it off. We're about to give you stress-beating superpowers, possibly transform your life. It's time to meet the authors of the revolutionary new book, Unstressable, A Practical Guide to Stress-Free Living. This book is brought to you by Mo Gordat and Alice Law. Mo is the former chief business officer of Google X, presenter of the podcast Slow Mo, and best-selling author of Solve for Happy, Scary Smart, and That Little Voice in Your Head. Alice is a stress management consultant who's also a podcaster, Reiki master, holistic performance coach. She's the co-author of The Law of Brand Attraction. Mo and Alice will explain how their science-based techniques, which are also spiritually nourishing, will allow you to manage stress so that you can protect your mental and physical health every day and bring more joy into your life as you age. The duo say the majority of us are living with chronic stress due to the demands of our continuously busy modern world. And while we cannot banish stress from our lives, we can actively choose how we react to it and recover from it. Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, Mo and Alice.
Nice to be here. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having us.
It is a treat to have you here today because you're going to help us solve a dilemma that our community of midlife women often refer to as midlife overwhelm. We want less stress. There's so much going on for women at this stage of life, along with the hormonal fluctuations, you know, the empty nest, job changes. It's a very big period for divorce in this country. It's also finding a new identity. So I thought we would go straight into talking about stress. And I thought I'd ask Mo for the technical reasons for stress. So what is chemically going on that causes us overwhelm and stress in our brain and body? I know that's a big question, but tell us the technicalities.
I love that you refer to me for the technical stuff. Actually, that's exactly my role. So Alice and I sort of are the yin and yang of the topic, if you want. I have failed to let my engineering mind stop thinking about the world as an engineer. So I look at everything first as a machine and then, of course, add a human touch to it. The machine of stress is actually very straightforward. You can look at it from a biological point of view. And from a biological point of view, if you've ever seen the movie The Hulk, it is basically a reconfiguration of your body, not to be destructive, but rather to do a very important task at the time when you're stressed, which is to survive, right? What normally happens, which is I think the consensus among most biologists and neuroscientists, is that you first sense a threat before your cognitive machinery actually finds out that you're threatened, right? So you first feel it in your amygdala, right near your brainstem, almost, I don't want to use the term, but almost like a lizard. You're literally just sensing it and reacting to it very, very quickly through a hormonal cocktail very quickly that gets to your, you know, adrenal glands on top of your kidneys, which release cortisol. Cortisol, I think, is as famous as hip hop. Everyone knows cortisol. Not everyone likes it, interestingly, because cortisol is very, very useful for you in many ways. It is basically signaling to your body that something could mean that you're going to end up being dinner. So basically, it reconfigures everything. It dilates your pupils. It directs more sugar to your brain so that you can think faster. It pushes blood to your muscles so that you can run away if you need to. All magnificent when you really think about it. It's an incredible survival machinery. The only difference is when you look at it in its true operating environment, such as, for example, a gazelle out in the wild, which has more or less the same reaction, this entire stress response is a few minutes. The gazelle runs away from the tiger and then basically shakes its body and it's basically happy as if nothing had happened. That is not what happens in humans. So believe it or not, the biology will make you, you know, feel stressed, and within 90 seconds, all of the hormones will be flushed out of your body. So every 90 seconds, you have a new opportunity to look at life and say, do I really need to be stressed? Is there a threat really? But then because we're living in the modern world, you know, you think of the heart of a mother, for example, if your child is, you know, has a bit of a flu, that's a very, very important reason to feel stressed. It almost feels like a tiger is attacking you. And that is generated over and over and over by your cognitive machinery, by your prefrontal cortex, to reaffirm to your body that there is a reason to be stressed. And so believe it or not, for those of us who are stressed more than 90 seconds, some of us are stressed for 90 days, 90 years, you know, it's quite incredible how far we can take this. That's because we regenerate this through our cognitive ability to tell our self stories. And throughout those months or weeks or years or days, we fail to realize that we're still safe and that perhaps that massive reconfiguration of our body is not needed. Stress in its native format is incredible. It really makes you superhuman. Stress when it lingers or when you anticipate it before it happens actually is the biggest reason for clinical visits in the world today.
And Alice, if we move on to talk about the emotional side and the actual impact of all of this that Mo has just explained to us, the actual chemistry of what's happening, you spend a lot of time helping super stressed business people as a stress management consultant. What actually happens with this kind of building of everyday little stresses, one after the other, after the other, after the other? What happens to us emotionally? What do you see in your clients? What are the behaviors? What happens to them?
Yeah, so it's interesting because it's always two parts. It's the feeling and also the behavioral change, like you just said. So you look at things like people waking up feeling really anxious and worried, concerned about the day ahead. Sometimes, you know, alert at night, unable to switch off. So I have so many clients who just say, you know, my partner is so annoyed at me because I can't switch off and be present. You know, that's a huge sign of emotional stress. Having trouble sleeping, feeling really distracted all the time, unable to just be present and sit in the body. Because when we're emotionally uncomfortable, the last place we want to sit is actually in our body and sit with our emotions. So we try to do things like outward distraction, you know, numbing out on Netflix or overworking or binge eating or less of eating, drinking, you know, wine is the first choice, a bit of alcohol to help you just have a sense of release at the end of the day. When actually we know that helps for 10 minutes, but it actually puts even more stress into our system. And obviously I'm not saying don't drink that lovely glass of wine, but in terms of when you're really stressed, it's something that we should be doing is active relaxation instead of, you know, behavior like that. And then, you know, we look at things like if their people are feeling detached and just, you know, not really engaged in lower mood, easily irritated as well. You know, that simple reaction of just snapping at a loved one because it was quite literally just a tiny thing that in the grand scheme is not a big deal. When we're stressed, it's the last thing that, you know, that just breaks the straw that breaks the camel's back. All those different things, you know, these behavioral changes, as well as looking at things like memory and we become more forgetful. And just unable to actually focus on one thing at a time. People find that really hard. You're going from sort of task to task instead of just being able to be sort of tunnel vision. And then even looking at other things like, you know, losing libido and just, yeah, a lack of energy and actual general fatigue. You know, we call that, you know, emotional fatigue. When our emotions are, we're really stressed, our emotions actually weigh us down. We become really tired when we haven't processed those negative emotions. So if any of those things sound like a normal part of your day, then you are actually experiencing emotional stress more than anything.
And the two of you together have written this brilliant book, which we've talked about in the intro. And I just wanted to mention a bit about Mo to our listeners, because they might not have come across you before. I first heard you interviewed on Elizabeth Day's podcast, How to Fail. And you spoke very movingly on that podcast about the death of your son, Ali. He was 21. This was in 2014, and he died after a routine operation accidentally went wrong. And you had reframed your thoughts around grief. And I really urge anyone who is grieving at the moment to listen to that podcast, because you did explain grief in such an extraordinary way. And you also explained death via quantum physics, which I found really comforting and reassuring. So that's kind of the background. I guess people would call you a sort of visionary in a way. But you've had a lot of stress in your life, which qualifies you to write this book. Your dad died in your arms when you were 24 after an extremely stressful life. And you say in the book that you do blame stress for his death. Your brother died of cancer a couple of years ago, sadly, and his wife died of a heart attack, which you again say was caused by stress. And all of this experience really took you into a kind of deep, logic-filled dive into how we cope with stress. As a result, one of the things that you came up with for the book, working with Alice, are the three L's, which I think are really important for the listeners. This premise of limit, learn, listen. So practically, that does help you deal with the big trauma stress in your life. Could you explain limit, learn, and listen to us, and how that's relevant to those who've been through quite traumatic, stressful events?
You find it very interesting when you look at some of us, each and every one of us. If you look at, you know, what stressed you when you're 20, you know, makes you laugh when you're 50. You realize that it's not the event itself that's stressing you. It's the way you deal with it that does. You know, when Alice and I got together on this book, Alice and I are literally yin and yang. So we're very opposite in our views to things, but we have so much respect for each other that we are willing to see things differently. I only agreed to write the book if I could get to understand stress from my engineering background. And when you really look at stress, the easiest way to understand it, believe it or not, is physics, is the stress that happens in objects. When you stress an object, a very typical question in elementary school is, why do camels not sink in the sand? It's because their hooves are so big that you distribute the weight over a very large area. And so accordingly, the stress on every square centimeter of that area is small. And that's exactly what's happening. When we get, you know, into our 50s, for example, we've enlarged the square area, the resources, the skills, the, you know, the abilities that we have acquired along the path, so that the same stress, the same force, external stressor, doesn't affect us the same way. It's not the event that's applied to you, it's how much abilities you have to carry it. Now, when you understand that, you understand that your accountability to make yourself unstressable. Remember, Unstressable, the book and the membership and the whole mission is not about helping you de-stress. It's about helping you deal with the events of life in a way that doesn't stress you. So we're not saying, you know, take yourself and sit in Sydney somewhere and surf or whatever. We're saying, no, continue to be engaged in life, but deal with it differently. The accountabilities are very straightforward. If you want to reduce the amount of forces applied to you, you have to limit stressors, which is actually so much easier than people think. We allow ourselves so much tiny stressors, we call them nuisances in the book, you know, that are really unnecessary, and they are the ones that lead to burnout. You don't break always under a big trauma. You very frequently break under a pile of little stressors. So limit is your number one accountability. Learn is that constant lifestyle of acquiring the resources, of understanding how you deal with every stressor. And listen, very interestingly, is really to learn to speak the language of stress, because we get stressed in four ways. Humans are made up of four elements, if you want. We're made up of a mind, a heart, a body, and a spirit, right? A consciousness, a non-physical entity, right? And each of them stresses in a different way, and each of them communicates to us in a different way. If we learn to understand how they talk to us by listening, learning to listen to your emotions, learning to listen to your body, learning to listen to your soul in terms of your intuition, learning to differentiate between what your mind is actually has analyzed before it told you and all of the incessant thinking, you suddenly learn to react to stress first much quicker and second much more effectively, because now you know what is going on. So that model is what we followed through Unstressable. Throughout the book and throughout our approach in the membership, we basically try to tell people it's always come back to one of the three. either there is a stress that you can limit, you can remove, that you can learn to deal with and, you know, enjoy post-traumatic growth even sometimes, use your traumas to learn to become better at dealing with life going forward. And the whole trick is to be able to constantly be in tune so that, you know, attuned to the messages that you get from your mind, body, heart, and soul.
That really does make so much sense. It's very comforting to hear it put like that, the three L's. But Alice, very interested in your story as well, your personal story, because you experienced a lot of stress in your very young years, your 20s. You lost your half-sister, Suzanne, to cancer. Your dad also died after dealing with stress and depression. How did you come to a point of thinking you wanted to create a career in stress management? What was the, I mean, you were dealing with your own stress. What happened? What got you to this point?
Yeah, it was definitely not what I thought I was going to do. That's for sure. Originally, I was working at the time. I thought I used to want to be in fashion. And I then left Net-a-Porter to go and get a job on the side to start my fashion label and my big ideas. And it was at that time that I was a PA in a finance company that all these things started to happen, like you say, continually one after another, starting with my sister getting very, very ill. And when I realized I sort of had stress coming from every angle of my life at once, it was financial, it was emotional, it was, you know, grief, it was relationships. And I just, my whole life was sort of turned upside down. And I realized all these things were actually things I couldn't limit. So they were stresses I couldn't control. And I had to sort of realize that the only thing I could change was me and my response and my reaction. And so I think for a while, I really sat in stress for way too long. I was super anxious. I used to wake up every morning scared to look at my phone in case I had more bad news from my family. And I really didn't know how to handle everything. So when I realized I had to change with me, I started sort of self-studying at the time under my desk, you know, anything I could sort of find materially to look at stress from these different angles, you know, energetically, spiritually, emotionally, and mentally. And started to realize all these things really worked, you know, meditation, mindfulness, even Reiki. And I was like, wow, this stuff is really incredible. It's managed to make me feel more like the calm, happy person I was growing up. There must be kind of something in this. And I still was, you know, trundling along thinking I'm not going to do this as a career, but the universe always has different ideas for you. So when I got made redundant, that was kind of the moment that I was like, okay, another stressor, but where's this actually leading me? So it was that point that I decided to then actually do something with it to, you know, train and do this as a career. But it was after my dad died, 4 years after my sister, from stress-related illness from a burst stomach ulcer. I was already doing this work. And then once he died from stress, and he'd suffered so much in the last 7 years emotionally from stress and physically, that I was like, well, this is really so important. Actually, this is something that I want to do on a bigger scale. And so it was, yeah, really seeing him go through that and losing him to it physically, it kind of really sealed the sort of idea of wanting it to be a mission, which is why it was wonderful then I went then met Mo, because we decided obviously to write this book together and create our 1 million a year out of stress mission. So yeah, it was definitely my dad that was my greatest inspiration, but equally also not wanting to feel that way myself and knowing how much stress affects not just the individual, but a family as well.
It's a ripple effect, isn't it? So one of the things that I think is interesting, Mo, though, is that the medical profession don't really support the reduction of stress as a clinical diagnosis of helping people, because the body tells the story, as you sort of mentioned in the book. So if we've got to midlife and we've gone through all these traumatic events, and there is significantly more in midlife because friends around us are getting older, we lose people, can we reverse the effect stress has had on our bodies? Because we know, we've done this podcast a long time. You go to the GP and talk about menopause or any of that, then you've got to see another GP. It's all very complicated. Can we reverse that stress on our lives? Can we make it better from midlife onwards?
As much as I'd risk upsetting the medical profession, absolutely. Absolutely. Look, I am not a woman in my middle age, and I understand fully that some of the challenges are, I think men are unfairly lucky, to be honest. But, you know, I wasn't very responsible, you know, in terms of dealing with the luck that I've been given. My Middle Eastern body doesn't age as you know, as normal. And, you know, I feel a lot younger. And I abused my body in so many ways. And actually, just for the, you know, for the disclaimer, I never drank, never had drugs, never smoked, you know, regularly or whatever. It's just that I worked myself into the ground all the time. even as I moved to my mission, 1 Billion Happy, which is really driven by my story of losing Ali, and it's really a big thing for me. And so I continued to work 12, 14-hour days. And when Alice and I started to write Unstressable, we decided that we will consult at the beginning of every chapter, and then what each of us will write alternatively different chapters, and then we'd edit each other's works and exchange notes and make it better, basically. So I read the chapter about physical stress, which Alice wrote, for the first time. I was on my retreat in 2022, in August 2022. I normally take 40 days of silence every year. And the first thing I did when I got there was to read the chapter. And I immediately went out of my silence, texted Alice, and I said, Alice, every single behavior, every single symptom that you're referring to in that chapter applies to me. As a matter of fact, you know, when we developed what we call the unstressable quiz afterwards, which measures how stressed you are and which quadrant, if you want, you know, physical, mental, or emotional, or spiritual, is causing it, I turned to have the highest stress in my physical stress. And she smiled, Alice, in her very lovely, soft way, as always, and said, yeah, I was hinting that for you for a long time. And so I said, okay, now what I am convinced, what do I do? You know, she started with inflammation, which completely flipped everything upside down. I would not be exaggerating if I tell you I felt 10 years younger at the end of those 40 days. You know, I ordered a food plan that basically was anti-inflammatory. I stuck to it very strongly. I spent time in nature. I grounded myself walking on, you know, barefoot on grass. I, you know, even though my engineering mind would sometimes refuse those suggestions from Alice, I did all of and each and every one of them. And I was 10 years younger. Last October, I fell deeply in love. And once again, believe it or not, you know, my wonderful wife, Hannah, was like, hey, I like you. I want you to stay longer. So I went back to my, you know, my typical workout schedules. I went back to move to zero sugar. These are not complex things at all. Once again, I feel probably 7 years further younger. So I'm Benjamin Button, if you think about it. And that's absolutely proven. But yeah, of course, there is a natural cycle to aging. But on top of that, you layer stress and you layer all of the misbehaviors, all of the abuse of our bodies. It sort of, you know, becomes worse. Take all of that abuse away, start to develop healthy habits, and you'll be in a much better place.
I'm so glad Mo took your advice, and it's very good. We're all going to be taking
advice. I am
advice.
Too.
Do some people just naturally manage stress better? Do they just have it innately built in a bit better? They may have followed some of your 3Ls, you know, unconsciously. Maybe they plan for stress, this idea of planning around it. Can you maybe talk around that a little bit?
Yeah, so I mean, we all have different stress thresholds. You know, like what will stress me might not stress you, and that's down to experience. For example, you know, if you're someone who has grown up as a young child going into hospital with a parent, for example, that's the normal for you. So it doesn't stress you in the way that, you know, you're used to being around doctors and nurses, you're used to being in that environment. But if you then have a loved one who's ill later in life, and that's your first experience of spending time in hospital, which is a stressful place, you can find that really, you know, really stressful. So you look at sort of your threshold in terms of experience of just what's the normal for your body and your system. Being aware of what part of you gets stressed the most is really important. So Mo talked about, you know, the quiz that we have that looks at mental, emotional, physical, spiritual. And Mo and I always laugh because his is always the physical is his one that, as he just said, that is his primary one that gets stressed if anything does. And mine's always my mental. I have to manage my mind more than anything else because that's always been something I'm very easy at going into my emotions. Feeling is my like complete natural, which is not for other people. So looking at what part of you gets more easily stressed. And then it's really, like you say, the reason why some people don't is because a lot of us just linger in stress without an awareness that we're even stressed. And we allow it to go on for so long until suddenly we feel like we're going to break. You know, we can only change what we're aware of. And when we become aware and actually understand when we're stressed in these different formats, you know, actually understand, okay, I shouldn't be feeling, like Mo said, I've been feeling that physical stress for way too long. This is me. or, you know, thinking about how much time you've actually spent in your head worrying about things or stressing instead of being present, or those emotional symptoms that we talked about earlier. Having the awareness to know that it's actually time to do something about it. I think that's the difference between people who allow stress to defeat them by not even choosing to sort of take acknowledge it, and those who actually think, okay, it's time to make a change. Because I think one of the main problems with stress today is we don't take it seriously enough. We think until we're in hospital that you're not that stressed. And that's a real, real shame, because it's obviously we can cause so much damage to our bodies before that point. But equally, you know, we say in the book, living stressed is not living. That's one of the taglines of the book. And it's really not, you know, to not be able to be present with your loved ones and to feel your most healthy and to feel calm. You know, we were all born calm and happy. No baby's first words were ever, "I'm so stressed." I don't think anyone's ever heard that come out of their child first. So yeah, really just that awareness, I think, that people are actually thinking of it as something they need to change for sure.
Because you do say in the book that you can manage it like a CEO. So you can write a plan and proactively plan to not feel the effects of stress in your day. Or you can look through your day and say, right, I'm going to take this out. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And that's going to stop me being so, because we can't see it, stress. I think that's another problem, isn't
that's
it? The language around it. And we can't see it, so we can't identify it. Mo, what is a stress inventory, and why should a midlife woman take it?
You mentioned CEO, right? You can't improve what you can't measure. If you're not aware of something, if you don't fully acknowledge what you're going through and what you're struggling with and what needs to be worked on and what's working well and what's, you know, your strengths and what are your wishes and so on and so forth, you're never going to move from where you are. And I think this is truly and honestly one of the biggest challenges with stress, is that the modern world makes it look like, yeah, that's how it should be. Alice and I, when we were writing Unstressable, several other books were sort of written but removed. So the original draft of Unstressable was 650 pages. One of those books was something we called a Superwoman Syndrome, which is the truth of how the modern world pushes a woman in her 30s and her 40s to just truly be a superwoman. You know, the number of disciplines that you have to take care of, you know, while you continue to look fabulous and, you know, never really show that you're stressed or vulnerable because, you know, you have it all under control, and then you have to succeed at work and manage at home and deal with, you know, the challenges of the outside world and so on and so forth. Somehow, and I say that with so much love, you're told that you have to keep doing this. And I'm like, no. You know, if I or any of my masculine friends were asked to do this, we would break down and cry. Of course, we would hide somewhere and cry because big boys don't cry, but we would. And the truth is you don't have to. And the truth is you actually need to sit down and say, hold on, here are all of the things that are causing me to feel stressed. Write them down. Write them down and then take a break. Go get yourself a tea and then come back and write down some more. And then truly look at some of them. Like Alice says it so beautifully in the limit part of A Ton of Stress, when we spoke about trauma, obsessions, nuisances, and noise. You know, Alice speaks about the first 15 minutes of the day where you get somewhere around 30 hits of stressors before you even leave home. Believe it or not, you go like, yeah, so what? You know, so what? The kids are annoying. So what? You know, I didn't find the socks. So what? We're late. So what? That I had an annoying email from work. So what? So what? So what? When the truth is, you can actually limit all of this. You just have to be aware of it. So the first step, we do a lot of exercises. We call them either practical exercises or reflection exercises in Unstressable. You know, the first exercise is understand how stressed you really are. Take an inventory of all of the items that are stressing you. We recommend that people take the free survey. We have a free survey on unstressable.com/quiz. And, you know, it's a very quick, like, I think 40 questions, and it will tell you exactly how stressed you are and what is causing your stress, emotional, physical, mental, or spiritual. Then dig deeper and tell yourself, and by the way, that friend is annoying me. This commute is not working well for me. This behavior from my children it needs a conversation. That bit of my, obligations needs to be assigned or delegated to someone else. I need to have a conversation with my partner around A, B, and C. There are so many things you can do, but you have to. You have to tell yourself, one, I'm aware of their existence, and two, I'm committed to change them. Otherwise, it lingers. You think that everything's okay, and then one morning you wake up, you're unable to get out of bed, you're completely burnt out, and basically you'll take a break.
Now, one of the things that does stress us out as superwomen trying to do all of this is our kids' stress, so our teenagers. Yeah. Stress and gets right to the heart of you. And of course, we're probably better at recognizing stress in others than we are in ourselves. But how do we help our teenagers or the young people in our lives? Because they don't really want to hear from us as parents.
Yeah.
Alice, what would you recommend?
I was thinking about how amazing it would be if I'd started learning this, not in my 20s, which is actually young to start learning this, but now. But if you started learning it at a teenage age, how ahead of everything you'd be. If, a teenager or children were just able to learn to deal with their emotions and their mind above everything else. I think if you look at how much the mental stress creates emotional stress and how all stresses feed into one another, mental feeds into emotional feeds into physical, and, spiritual is also affected by emotional, and they all go back into, their little loop. The mental and emotional, that starting point to learn from and that capacity for teenagers is so important. Just how are you actually talking to yourself? And becoming aware of what that internal conversation is, because the most important conversation we will ever have is the one we continually have with ourselves. It's the only one we have from the start of our life till the very end. And so becoming aware of what that internal voice is that's causing you more stress and being able to then control it. Mo has this wonderful method of Meet Becky with the brain, which is obviously was written in Soul to Happy, and he's put it again in Unstressable, and actually looking at how we can tell our brain what to do. And how we can pattern interrupt our thoughts. I've always said to clients, if you can become aware of your thoughts and then stop and pattern interrupt to then change them, that's when you can actually make the change. So just telling your teenager, okay, if you're having a bad time mentally, you're having anxious thoughts, become aware of them without judgment, befriend your thoughts and befriend your emotions. So use a pattern interruption for your mind, cancel, or Mo says, you choose me a new useful thought, tell your brain to start again and choose a useful thought. Get into that habit because that makes it stronger for you to be able to choose a happy thought. And then get into the habit of actually befriending your emotions. One of the problems we have with anxiety particularly is that we feel so uncomfortable in our anxious feeling that we want to run away from it, like I said, and distract with emotional behaviors, be out of our body. But the more friendly we are to our emotions, the quicker our negative emotions, for want of a better word, because emotion's neither good or bad, but for the sake of it, I'll say negative, that uncomfortable feeling. The more curious we are and the more we treat them like a friend, all a negative emotion wants is your attention. And the sooner you give it your attention, the sooner it leaves. So we get into this cycle of not giving it attention, trying to push it away. And then it lingers and lingers and we become more and more anxious, more and more stressed, more and more, even sad or irritated and emotionally uncomfortable. And so, I always say, a negative emotion is only ever showing you one of two things, something outside of yourself that you need to take action on and change, or something inside of yourself that you need to listen to and heal. And that's it. It's not there to hinder you. It's there to help you. So yeah, it's looking at telling teenagers to get curious with your emotions. If you can get into a dialogue of just when you feel uncomfortable saying, okay, sitting still, taking a few deep breaths and just asking yourself, okay, how do I actually feel? And what is this emotion trying to show me? And why might it be there? Looking at those questions of, where, why, what, where is it in my body? What might this be about? And, why might it be about, in my body? And what can I do about it? And just getting into that curious conversation is one of the best gifts you can give anyone, to be honest.
Your book, Unstressable, has, it's full of practical exercises. It's full of lots of questions to ask yourself, lots of thinking, but it also has the 7 habits of the unstressable, which are really useful. I won't go through them all here. I think everyone needs to get the book. But the two that I was really interested in, because I don't think we hear this much, is live from the heart, relate to more than this world. What do those two really mean?
So yeah, lips in the heart is quite literally being able to make your choices based on your heart, not just your head. You know, we spend so much time as a society not even doing what we think is authentically true to us, but what we think is, you know, just right based on everyone else around us. Mm. And getting so caught up in just, you know, the outside logic of the world and intellect, and really diminishing our emotional intelligence and how we are the most, you know, sensory creatures on the whole planet. Latest research from Brené Brown, who's, you know, the most amazing emotional, the forefront of emotional intelligence, as far as I'm concerned. In her book, Atlas of the Heart, she talks about how we're actually capable of 87 different emotional experiences and emotions as humans, but the average person can only name three. And that is the reality. We're so disconnected from our heart space, from our emotional space, because we've been so taught to look outward and not go inward. And so living from the heart is really being able to do that, really being able to go inward and sit with your emotions and use them as your greatest ally. You know, use them as something that guides you rather than something that really scares you. And being able to make choices that, because they're aligned with, you know, your emotional side, with your heart space, that actually are right for you and feel good, not just because you think you should be doing them.
Yeah, and joy is always felt from and in the heart, right? You never really feel joy because you have solved an algebraic equation, right? We never really make memories or, you know, remember moments because of the intellect, in the thoughts that were happening. We always remember the feelings, how we felt when we were in Rome. Alice speaks so beautifully about how our souls communicate to us through our intuition. They tell us something is wrong. They tell us something needs to change, right? And at the same time, that ability for us to realize that this human experience that we're going through is not limited to this physical form. This is not the end of it. This human experience is a connection that I have had with Alice intellectually. You know, we feel like family. We align on so many spiritual things. This is truly living. Most people don't recognize that. So many people cross your path and you fail to create that connection. We have tiny little categories, my kids, my, you know, husband or wife, my this, my that. We fail to recognize that everything that comes into our life is bigger than that, right? Every living being is a connection, is something beyond our physical being. Now, here's the interesting thing. As middle-aged women, you may tell yourself, oh, but Mo, you're working on 1 billion happy. That is purpose. Not at all. Okay, the task that was assigned to me by life, purpose, believe it or not, if you look back at the moments in your life and the lives of everyone you know that have completely flipped your world and the world around you upside down, none of them were planned at all. None of them were you telling yourself, I'm going to do this to change the world. That doesn't happen. I had to lose my son, Ali, after he tells me very specific things and teaches me so that I write them in a book and then the mission starts. That's not my choice. And what is more of a purpose than bringing another life, than creating another life? Truly, purpose is not that big title that we give ourselves and then wait 18 years and then do 18 minutes talk on a TED talk about it. Purpose is to look at your life right now and say, what has life given me as a duty? In my current setup, what is my purpose? And your purpose, by the way, could extend to 1 minute, 1 hour, or 1 day. It's not something that is 20 years away. It's putting your phone down, taking a deep breath, and having a wonderful conversation with your teenage daughter that saves her life forever. That conversation is not instructive, is not angry, is not frustrated. It's fully loving. It's fully open. It's, you know, it's attentive and you can listen. That is your life purpose for that 1 hour. Then you move on and there is another life purpose for another hour. And then there is another life purpose for another hour. But it's that idea of saying my life's purpose for this 1 hour is my daughter, is my home, is my self, is my body, is my partner, is my learning and development. And managing to get into that, everything else fades. The commute becomes easy. The annoying boss becomes natural. All bosses are annoying, and so on and so forth. Life becomes a lot easier when you relate to something more than your day-to-day physical existence.
It's an amazing place to end. It's really fantastic having the two of you on to make us feel, to become unstressable. As you say, I highly recommend the book. It's got lots and lots of information in it. And it's a really well-written, lovely read as well. It's very easy to read. So thank you, Alice and Mo, and thank you for that wisdom. It's absolutely brilliant.
Thank you for having us. It's really very kind.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, I feel very relieved now I know all of that. And I feel like that's some great strategies from Mo and Alice that we can take forward into our daily life. And now we've hit the least stressful bit of the show, haven't we, Trish, which is our nostalgia noodle. What have you got for me this week?
I think I've got a good one because this was quite unexpected and rather fabulous. Another Alderney story. We've had the blonde hedgehogs. But did you know about the Wombles on Alderney?
I didn't, because the Wombles of Wimbledon Common.
Well, exactly. It's confusing, right?
How do they get there?
Okay, so Elizabeth Beresford, who wrote to the Wombles, marvellous woman, she lived on Alderney. So it's got one of these little plaques with a thing, a house with a blue plaque on it. Went past it, took a picture outside, and there's Wombles everywhere. They have these big carved wood Wombles sitting on benches and here. And then we went to the museum, the Alderney Museum, lots of World War II. I'm going to save Nazi megastructures for another episode because that's a whole other story, Neil's World War II obsession.
Well, that is what Alderney is known for, isn't it? Yes. So it's a World War II aficionado place, isn't it?
We might do that in another episode because we're going to focus on Wombles now. In the museum, the Alderney Museum, the first thing you come to is a big case of Wombles. So Uncle Bulgaria's, Madame Cholet's, Orinoco's. There was one called Alderney. I'd forgotten about him. And there was, do you remember McWomble?
I don't.
The Scottish one.
Was he wearing tartan? Was it?
Wearing tartan.
Casual basis Womble.
Wearing tartan. Anyway, it all brought back to me the fact that, so my little Womble story is, you know the song, which now we're going to have in our heads for the rest of the day, because once it's in there, it won't go. I didn't know about Wimbledon Common. I didn't know. I've never been to Wimbledon when I was a child. Didn't know about, I knew about tennis, didn't know about Wimbledon Common. Probably never heard of a common before. So I thought the song, the way it paused was, Wombles of Wimbledon, pause, common are we. So I thought the common meant that there were lots of them. Not that there was something called Wimbledon Common, because I didn't know. Didn't make sense to me. Did you know that? Did you know about Wimbledon Common?
Well, I did hear the song as the Wombles of Wimbledon Common. So, yes, I did. And pertinent to this, and really never relevant in life until this absolute conversation, which is rather bizarre. My first ever job, as you can imagine, was the Cornish Times. And then my first London training job was the Wimbledon News. So every time I said I was leaving to go and work on the Wimbledon News, they would say, oh, send us some pictures of the Wombles. So I was a bit tired of hearing about the Wombles.
The Wombles! Well, I tell you what, because I live near Wimbledon Common. I walk there all the time. No Wombles, no wood-carved Wombles like there are in Alderney.
No, they're entirely made up, Trish.
They could market in some way, is all I'm saying. I might start a petition. What do you think? Wombles on Wimbledon Common, are we?
No, I see you've got other things to do with your 70-year-old boyfriend. Well, thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening to that drivel, frankly. Amazed anyone's still here. Anyway, thank you very much. We have some great guests lined up for this season, so we will see you, or you will hear us, next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.